A lit match is held up in the darkness, igniting a brilliant light beneath a cloudy sky. Beams fan out, then fade, becoming a ball of flame. The flames resolve into the symbol of a phoenix with flame wings. Beneath appear the words, Phoenix Pictures, in gold lettering. White letters read awarding funds from the National Lottery beside the fingers crossed logo. Blue light flashes and resolves into UK Film Council in bold white letters. Phoenix Pictures and Momentum Pictures present in association with Isle of Man Film and the UK Film Council, a David Kirshner production in association with BBC Films, a Chris Noonan film, Renee Zellweger and Ewan McGregor in Miss Potter, with Bill Patterson, Barbara Flynn, Lloyd Owen and Emily Watson. A woman's hand selects a pencil from a wooden box and sharpens it with a small knife. She pours water into a glass, then selecting a paintbrush, wets it in the water and dips the tip into the blue paint in a small metal tray of watercolours. Casting by Priscilla John, CDG. Costume designer Anthony Powell. Music by Nigel Westlake, with additional music by Rachel Portman. Editor Robin Sales. Production designer Martin Childs. Director of photography Andrew Dunn, BSc. Executive producers Renee Zellweger, Louis Phillips, Nigel Wall and Steve Christian. Produced by Mike Medavoy, David Kirshner, Corey Cianega, Arnold W. Messer and David Thwaites. Written by Richard Maltby Jr. Directed by Chris Noonan. The artist makes neat blue strokes on a piece of paper. Dips the brush in the water, turning it blue, and continues mixing paint, making a pastel shade of turquoise. She brushes the colour onto the paper and dabs away the excess water with tissue. The countryside of the Lake District features rolling wooded grasslands. Beneath a cloudy sky, a lake is surrounded by ancient volcanic hills. A woman, plainly dressed in brown skirt and cardigan, walks on the grassy lake shore.
There's something delicious about writing the first words of a story. You can never quite tell where they'll take you. Mine took me here.
She sits writing in the sun on a grassy hill overlooking the lake. A subtitle reads, London, 1902.
Looking back, the city and I never much liked each other. An unmarried woman, after all, was expected to behave in very particular ways, which did not include traipsing from publisher to publisher with a gaggle of friends.
Beatrix Potter, smart in jacket and hat, gathers up her watercolours.
Now, listen to me. You must not be afraid. And don't talk too much. Friends who, sadly, others were not so keen to meet.
In an office, two somberly dressed men, one with pince-nez spectacles, consider the pictures.
I've been selling my drawings for greeting cards, place cards, etc. for 7 years.
She holds out a card-sized picture. The other man with mutton chop whiskers flicks through a handmade book entitled Peter Rabbit.
Bunnies in jackets with brass buttons. However do you imagine such things?
I don't imagine them. They're quite real. They're my friends.
Are you base the animal characters on your friends?
No, the animals are my friends. Before Peter Rabbit, there was Benjamin Bunny, and then Sir Isaac the Newt. I have their drawings as well, if you'd like to see them.
That won't be necessary, unfortunately, Miss Potter. It is Miss Potter, is it not? Yes, of course. Silly of me. Unfortunately, the market for children's books...
Yes, of course. I completely understand. It was silly of me. No experience.
F. Wall and Company would like to publish your little book, Miss Potter. But best not to get overly hopeful. I know publishing your book will not sell a great number of copies, but I think we can turn a small profit.
My dear Mr. Warren, well, I'm pleased. Very pleased indeed. I shall do everything possible to ensure that you've not made a mistake. Miss Wigan, I believe we can go. Thank you very much indeed, Mrs. Warren, for your time.
Our pleasure. My brother always knows what he's doing.
Oh, I'm quite particular about book size and price. And I'd like to avoid that dreadful gothic typeface your children's books usually have.
I'm sure everything will be to your satisfaction.
Miss Potter, you're...
Of course. My portfolio. Come along, Peter.
With a grin, she reclaims the little book from the whiskered Mr. Warren who offered to publish it, and nods to the other Mr. Warren, holding the door open for her.
Sir Isaac, the new...
You can't be serious, Frayne. That book won't sell 10 copies.
Of course not. However, the thought did occur to me.
Norman,
we promised our little brother a project. If he makes a muck of it, what will it matter? I think Miss Potter may turn out to be a godsend.
Home, Miss Potter?
No, Saunders. Drive me through the park. Through all the parks.
I beg your pardon, Miss Potter?
Drive!
Walk on.
We did it. Did you hear my heart? It was a kettle drum. You see, we cannot stay home all our lives. We must present ourselves to the world. And we must look upon it as an adventure.
The rabbit drawing blinks as she speaks. She smiles broadly at her chaperone, the pale and severe Miss Wiggin, who sighs and looks unimpressed. The top-hatted coachman drive through the grand wrought-iron gates of a London park. Beatrix opens the window and, smiling, sniffs the air.
Faster, Saunders! Faster, Saunders, if you please!
No, Miss Beatrix, no!
Fast as you can, old boy!
The galloping pair of white horses startle a gent with a top hat and cane. Oblivious, Beatrix leans out of the window, eyes closed, smiling serenely. The coach arrives at a grand house with tall windows and a white facade.
Whoa!
The coachman descends to open the door for his passengers.
Saunders?
Smiling Beatrix and distressed Wiggin enter the house. A grand-looking lady looks up from her embroidery.
Beatrix, where have you been? It's after 4 o'clock.
I'm not a child. I can do things without my mother's permission.
I was hoping to use the carriage myself this afternoon. Where were you?
I took a drive with my friends.
Her mother looks taken aback as Beatrix strides upstairs to her room at the top of the house. The room is cluttered, but comfortable, with drawings and pictures in frames on the wall, a table covered in artist's materials, and an easel. Still grinning, Beatrix places her portfolio on the table and takes off her jacket. Her mother comes in.
You don't have any friends.
Yes, I do, Mother. Every time I draw.
Yeah, some of your paintings are quite pretty, Beatrix, but I'm not going to deceive you as your father does and call them great art.
Beatrix grins, and looking annoyed, her mother sweeps out. Beatrix leans forward at her desk and speaks to a drawing of a rabbit lying down.
Well, my friend, when I'm a published author, then we shall see.
In pencil, she starts to draw a rabbit running. A young Beatrix works on the picture of the reclining bunny, copying a real rabbit in front of her. Her brother pins a moth to a board. Their governess comes in.
Beatrix, Bertram, time for good nights.
I haven't finished yet.
Come on, hurry up. Bertram!
There, I got him. Bertram, you're barbaric.
Come on, you two. Hurry up. Down you go. Slowly.
Hurry, Rupert. It won't do to be late to the hides.
Doesn't mamma look beautiful, Beatrix? Being in a temper puts such a rose into her cheeks.
When you grow up, Beatrix, and have to run a household, plan parties, keep a social calendar, and put up with a man who's never been introduced to a clock, your cheeks will glow too. Look at this ribbon. No, it's unsightly. Change them into something decent.
Dear, oh dear.
And give this nightdress away.
Oh, this will never do. Just all fingers and thumbs.
Impossible, Rupert. We are so late.
What have you drawn today, Beatrix?
Benjamin Bunny having a rest.
Oh, his ears are getting better and better. And the shading here is very good, Beatrix.
Rupert, say your good nights now, children.
Good night, Mother.
Good night, Beatrix.
Good night, Father.
Good night, Beatrix.
Good night, Mother.
Good night, Bertram.
Good night, Father.
Good night, Beatrix.
Now, hurry upstairs.
Come on, mustn't make Mama and Papa
later than they are.
Oh, children.
What now?
On my way home, I happened to walk down Piccadilly, and what do you think jumped into my pockets? Something very special for the young entomologist. And something very suitable for the young lady who's very soon to grow up to run a fine home just like her mother.
We'll open them upstairs. Come on.
Thank you, Father.
Yeah.
Thank you, Father.
Come on.
They run upstairs. Beatrix, startled when her bunny picture began to move as her father touched it, runs to the window.
Late, late, late.
We are not late.
They'll never be invited to the Hides again.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Helen, it's polite to be a little late. Now get in the carriage.
This isn't polite, late. This is late, late.
Beatrix sees the coach as rabbits pulling a pumpkin.
Right, wee ones. One story and then bed.
I want Beatrix to tell a story. Hers are funny.
Oh.
Indeed they are, and I know exactly what it'll be about.
Tom Thumb and Hunker Munker.
Precisely. Tom, Hunker, are you ready to plan a story?
Oh, yes, for X and Tactus.
Well, we shall see about that. This will be your test. Over there.
Tom and Hunker are white mice.
Once upon a time, those two excellent housekeepers, Lucinda and Jane, bought some shiny new porcelain food, which they set out on their perfectly appointed dining room table. Then they decided to go for a walk. Da, 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 da. Suddenly, there came a scuffling noise from the kitchen. Tom Thumb and Hunker Munker crept out. The two mice saw that the dining table was set for dinner. Tom Thumb leapt up and took a big bite from the first plate and broke his tooth.
Oh! Are we expecting someone?
It's my publishers.
Oh.
It's not a social call. In fact, I'm rather dreading it.
I wish you wouldn't invite tradespeople into the house. They carry dust.
Well, next time I shall go to their office.
Portfolio in hand, she strides past her mother. A maid enters.
Mr. Norman Warne.
Miss Potter.
Oh.
I hope you will forgive my intrusion into your daily routine.
I was expecting one of
Yes, I am Harold and Fruing's brother. I've recently joined the firm, and they have done me the great honor of assigning your book to me. Thank you. It was most gracious of you to invite me to...
Tea?
Yes, I would love some tea. Yes, thank you. Lemon. Thank you.
Hair neatly combed and sporting a moustache, the young man sits under Wiggins' cold gaze.
Extraordinary. Oh, and funny. Delightful and magical and so beautifully drawn. I am utterly, utterly speechless.
Perhaps we should discuss our business, Mr. Warne.
I put your drawings aside with the greatest reluctance.
Your brother's letter makes two proposals which I find quite unacceptable. First, they'd like the drawings to be in colour. I'm adamant they'd be in black and white.
But Peter Rabbit's blue jacket and the red radishes surely would like your enchanting drawings reproduced as they are.
Well, of course I would prefer colour, but colour will make the book cost far more than little rabbits can afford. I'm adamant. Which brings us to your brother's second point. They wish to reduce the number of drawings by nearly a third. Totally unacceptable.
Let me explain. The idea of reducing the number of drawings was not my brother's, but my own. If we can reduce the number to 31 precisely, then the illustrations for the entire book can be printed on a single sheet of paper, using what we call the three-color process that you desire, and at a relatively low level of cost, yes?
Oh.
I have given your book a great deal of attention. I would like it to look colorful on the shelf so that it stands out from ordinary books.
You have given it some thought. Which other books have you supervised, Mr. Warne?
Personally?
Yes.
This will be my first.
Ah.
Miss Potter, I have recently informed my brothers and my mother that I am no longer content to stay at home and play nursemaid solely because I am the youngest son. No,
I would like a proper job working for my family's firm. And they have assigned me you. Does that make things clearer?
In other words, you have no experience whatsoever, but because you've made a nuisance of yourself demanding a chance, they've fobbed you off on me.
Miss Potter, I know all too well what my brothers intended, giving me your bunny book, as they call it, but I find your book quite enchanting, delightful. And if they intended to fob me off, as you say, then we shall show them. We shall give them a bunny book to conjure with, in colours, mixed to your satisfaction in front of your very eyes at the printer.
At the printer? Oh, I could never.
I will escort you there myself, if you will allow me the honour.
Why would I never? Of course I'll go. I'm a grown woman, Miss Wigan will be there. I see absolutely no reason why an artist shouldn't visit her printer.
Excellent, Miss Potter. Jolly good. Thank you. I shall make all the arrangements, and I'm in every way, my dear lady, at your service.
He stumbles against a maid.
You and rabbits. Extraordinary. Excuse me.
Beatrix looks delighted.
Johnson, come and get the trunks, would you?
Yes, ma'am.
When I was 10, my mother badgered my father into spending the summer in the Lake District, as did other fashionable families. Like an animal released from its cage, I fell under its spell.
Mind your frocks now. Come here. The woods are full of fairies and little folk that look for children that get their clothes dirty. And when they find them, they send the fairy beasts at night with sharp teeth and a ready appetite for young flesh.
The young potters play in the woods. On a stone wall overlooking the neat gardens of their lakeside summer residence, Beatrix draws another rabbit picture as Bertram plays down below. As the children play by a pond, a frog leaps from a lily pad. Bertram plays croquet and they walk in the woods.
Hello.
Bertram.
Don't.
Farmer's children, their hands. Jams, come on.
Bertram.
Mrs. Potter fusses over the children. A hedgehog climbs into a pile of wooden boxes. Beatrix watches and makes sketches. From the bushes, the children stalk a wild rabbit which has made its way into the garden.
That's me.
The rabbit runs through a vegetable garden.
There he is! Oh, yes! Come on! Out of the way!
The rabbit hides in a leek patch. Beatrix and Bertram pursue their prey through the steeply sloping gardens. When the rabbit pauses by a laurel bush, Beatrix makes a final leap to catch it. She misses, and the rabbit bounds away. Returning to the house, Beatrix is covered from head to toe in mud.
I don't think a thrashing will be necessary. I'll just leave the window in the nursery unlatched tonight. The fairy beasts will take care of the rest.
No! I'll stay clean!
Bertram.
Really, Beatrix, what young man is ever going to marry a girl with a face full of mud?
Well, I shan't marry, so it doesn't matter.
Of course you shall marry. All girls marry. I did. Your grandmother did. Even Fiona will one day.
Well, I shan't. I shall draw.
Oh, those silly drawings. Then who will love you?
My art and my animals. I won't need more love than that.
Well, perhaps not at 11, but let's see if you still feel the same way at 18. I drew Mama when we first met, and she married me. And Fiona, doesn't mud wash off? Bertram, come with me.
Die, you little devil!
Ugh. Right. Prince Charming himself couldn't resist such a bonny wee girl.
Not when he meets my brother, Vlad the Impaler. Got you.
Bedtime, my young reprobates! Now, shall I leave a window open, or...?
No! I don't like fairy beasts!
Well, it is a well-known fact that fairy beasts never eat a child when he's tucked up in his own bed. The fairies have been in the North Country for hundreds of years and have had many adventures. Have I told you about the changeling child?
No.
Yes, several times.
I want to hear it. I'll go ahead, Fiona. I'll tell myself a story.
Right. Once upon a time, there was a king and a queen.
Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits. Their names were Flopsy, Mopsy,
Cottontail, and Peter. Now, my dears, said old Mrs. Rabbit one morning, you may go into the fields or down the lane, but don't go into Mr. McGregor's garden. Why not, Mother?
Because your father had an accident there. He was put in a pie by Mrs. McGregor.
Peter, who was very naughty, ran straight away to Mr. McGregor's garden and squeezed under the gate.
I like it.
Beatrix and Warren watch with concentrated concern as Beatrix's pictures are reproduced in a bustling printing works. Wiggins stands aloofly at a distance.
But round the end of a cucumber frame, whom should he meet but Mr. McGregor? Peter was out of breath and trembling with fright, and he had not the least idea which way to go.
It's muddy out here.
One more, Mr. Mortimer. Lighten it up,
Mr. McGregor caught sight of him at the corner, but Peter did not care. He slipped underneath the gate and was safe at last in the wood outside.
Not quite. See here. It's still abyss.
The presses produce sheet after sheet of colour pictures. Wiggins sits pale and taciturn to one side.
When Peter came home, his mother put him to bed with a tablespoonful of chamomile tea. But Flopsy, Mopsy and Cottontail had bread and milk and blackberries for supper.
Warren hands the very first copy of Peter Rabbit to Beatrix.
This book,
it's changed things for me, Mr. Warren.
How so?
Well, for one thing, it's given me the chance to prove to my mother that an unmarried woman of 32 can do more than attend tea parties and smile at dull conversations.
Yes, indeed. You know, my family never wanted me to get into publishing either. We do make rather a good team, don't you think?
Provided, of course, we prove them wrong.
Warren, Beatrix and Wiggin enter the wrought iron gate to the Warren's townhouse family home. Warren leads the way to the comfortable sitting room where his sister and wheelchair-bound mother await.
Mother, this is Miss Potter.
Ah, at last. We poor forgotten folk in Bedford Square get to share some of Norman's excitement.
Mrs. Warren, it's so kind of you to invite me.
Nonsense. It was the desperate act of a woman who was beginning to forget what her son looked like.
Mother. And this is my sister, Amelia.
Hello. Norman allowed us a peek at Peter Rabbit, Miss Potter. We found it utterly charming, so we wheedled, cajoled and absolutely insisted that Norman bring you round for tea. I have decided that you and I are going to be friends.
Have you?
Well, Norman tells me that you're unmarried, as am I, and that you're not unhappy about it, and I can't tell you how much that pleases me.
Why can't you talk about the weather like other girls?
Well, all the other unmarried daughters in our circle, and believe me, there are many, they sit around all day gossiping and unaccountably bursting into tears. But you have done something. You've written a book. I warn you, I am prepared to like you very much.
Well, in that case, I shall have to like you too, Miss Warren.
Call me Millie, and that's to be the last of Miss Potter too, I'm afraid.
Absolutely. Beatrix, by all means.
Thank goodness, the tea. I'm beginning to feel quite ill with all this bonhomie.
Oh, do let's have tea in the garden, Mother. It's too beautiful a day in every way not to share it with the flowers.
Beatrix looks politely bemused.
Well, I love to garden. Mother disapproves, but I can't help myself. I love flowers shockingly. That's why you have the hands of a greengrocer.
I do not.
Thank heavens. Norman sometimes deigns to read to me. If I had to rely on you for companionship, I should expire of loneliness.
My mother's taste in books, Miss Potter, and I'm afraid in life runs to the, melodramatic.
Oh, nonsense. I like good English biographies, and you know it. I loathe silly romances, such as the ones your brothers publish.
My brothers and I, Mother. I am part of the firm now, too, you know.
Oh, a sweet-natured boy like you does not need to work. Your brothers provide quite well for all of us, and I need your smile here. That then no one listens to a crotchety old lady in a wheelchair.
Indeed they don't, Mother. My mother may be crotchety, Miss Potter, but she does have an eye for beautiful things. She was fascinated by your drawings.
Oh.
Utterly unique.
Oh, yes, well. When I see something unusual, I'm not content just to look at it. I must capture it.
last summer, in the farmyard, I was drawing something that was quite lovely in the sun. And suddenly I realised I was drawing the pig's swill bucket. I had to laugh at myself. I feel a bit of a chill, Norman. Can you take me inside?
Of course.
Please excuse me. It was delightful meeting you, Miss Potter.
And you.
Do stay longer and teach Millie how to behave.
Funny.
I think that means she likes you.
Did she say she likes to draw swill buckets?
Indeed she did, Mother. Indeed she did.
Now, I think by Wednesday you could hang the lace curtains upstairs. Then at least it'll look like summer, even if it doesn't feel like it.
Yes, madam.
Oh, Beatrix, what is this stain on your blouse? Jane says it won't wash out and she's tried everything.
Oh, it's ink.
Ink.
I must have brushed against something at the printer's. Jane, I'm very sorry for causing you extra work.
Jane, take the blouse away. Give it to the poor. This behaviour shows scant regard for your father's money.
Well, one day I shall make enough money to buy my own clothes. I'm far too old to be living off the generosity of my father.
You're too old to be spending so much time in the company of a man who takes you to printers. Your father does not approve, and neither do I.
Mr. Warne is publishing my book.
That book? I can hardly wait till it's finished and forgotten. I don't understand you, Beatrix. Your father and I have introduced you to so many suitable young men of your class, young men of fortune and impeccably good family.
Oh, certainly. Like that charming fellow, Lionel Stokely.
Lionel is a particular favourite of his uncle, the Earl, whom we visit every summer at Stokely Court.
Oh, and I do regret terribly that I didn't accept Harry Haddon Bell.
Harry's great-grandfather went to Sandhurst. Harry's grandfather went to Sandhurst. Harry's father went to Sandhurst.
And so I went to Sandhurst.
The father and I and the gamekeeper often go out riding in the morning and shoot breakfast.
Ashton's a crack shot.
But no, you're just a pig-headed goat.
Mr. Warne is asking for you at the door, miss.
Mr. Warne? He's not expected.
Unannounced perfection.
Warne and Beatrix speed away in a carriage. Warne smiling quietly to himself, Beatrix looks puzzled and Wiggins sits in taciturn silence. Once out of the carriage, Warne leads the way, striding down a narrow street and points proudly to a shop window where lies a neat stack of Beatrix's book. Small and neatly bound, the brown cover bears The Tale of Peter Rabbit in shiny lettering.
Two sold while we were at the bookseller's. That amounts to 40 in a week.
40?
Which is 160 in a month. Gracious. And I'm trying to remember my 12 times table. 1920 in a year.
I can't breathe.
That's just in one shop. My dear Miss Potter, you are an author. We have achieved what we set out to do. We have created a book. What's the matter? A cloud just passed across your face.
You've been very generous with your time, Mr. Warne. Shown me things that I never would have seen. Printing houses. I shall miss your company.
Are you losing my company?
Well, it just occurred to me that the book is out and our association is coming to an end.
Miss Potter.
He touches her hand.
I had hoped that you might have other stories.
Really? Really? Do you know, I recently remembered one. I thought I'd forgotten it. About a duck. A very stupid duck.
Based on one of your friends?
It's based on myself, I think. It's a story I told a friend once.
Yes?
My family summers in the Lake District. And there was someone there, the groundsman's son, who was always interested in my stories.
A young man in cap and Wellington boots meets Beatrix in an old barn.
Oh, Miss Beatrix, are you skulking?
No such thing, Willy Healers. No, I was drying off my sketchbook.
The book contains animal sketches, including a duck wearing a shawl and bonnet.
Not bad, Miss Beatrix. Do you have any animal stories for me today?
I don't. Sorry, nothing new. That's Jemima. She doesn't have a story yet. Not a proper one.
Jemima Duck?
Jemima Paddle Duck. And a stupider duck the world has never seen. She goes looking for a safe place to lay her eggs, then meets a charming gentleman with a long bushy tail and very sharp teeth.
Aha!
Precisely. The gentleman offers her his shed.
And Jemima is surprised to find that there are so many feathers in it. But then, as I told you, she is a very stupid duck.
I like it.
They walk across a high green meadow.
I'd love to paint every view in this valley, but I'm not very good at landscapes.
Wait too long and it won't be here to paint, Miss Beatrix.
Really? That's ridiculous.
No, I'm serious. The large farms are being broken up into small plots and sold off.
Well, you can't stand in the way of progress.
So they say. But I say, beauty's worth preserving.
I know you do, Willie. But nobody could disagree with you about that. Well, I'll see you soon, then.
Perhaps not, Miss Beatrix. I'm leaving for Manchester next week.
To study the law?
Yes, indeed. Have to better myself somehow.
Good luck.
Send me some drawings.
I will.
He encouraged me to take my writing seriously.
We must get started on the new story straight away. Jemima Puddle Duck. I think the public should like that. And Tom Thumb and Hunker Munker. What do you think?
Well, if you think...
Your book has been very important in my life. You have been very important in my life.
And you and mine, Mr. Warren.
We must do it again and again.
And again.
I promise you, I intend to be a nuisance.
She beams at him, looking thrilled. Sitting at her desk, Beatrix writes carefully with a fountain pen and draws a picture of two mice, one of them carving a joint of meat. More pictures roll off a printing press, and Beatrix paints a fox wearing a green jacket, talking to Jemima Puddle Duck, in her blue bonnet and pink shawl.
When did you decide you wouldn't marry?
Just before my 20th birthday, Mother came to my room and announced that Lionel Stokely was to marry Gwendolyn Olcott and they were to live at Stokely Court, which Lionel had just inherited from the Earl. And I knew right then that she would bring me no more suitors, and that I would never marry. And that shocked me. But I felt relieved. And that shocked me. So I went into the garden and filled an entire notebook with sketches.
Men are bores. They're useful for only two things in life, financial support and procreation.
Billy, you say outrageous things.
But the price.
What price?
Domestic enslavement, childbirth, terrifying. No, unmarried women have a better life. I swear it's true. No houses, no babies, no husbands demanding things all the time. As long as one's lucky enough in life to have a good friend, I'm so glad Norman found you, Beatrix. I was missing something I didn't even know.
Bundles of the new book, The Tale of Two Bad Mice, are wrapped in brown paper. Beatrix unwraps her copy, smiling at the neat grey cover with its picture of a mouse wearing a dress.
Dear Miss Potter, I enclose with great pleasure the latest in what I hope will be a long line of tales. Yours affably, Norman Warren.
Mr. Warren, would you and Millie like to come to a Christmas party? My parents hold one every year, and I think it's high time that I invited someone.
Yes, we'd be delighted to attend. Thrilled, in fact.
Working in her studio, Beatrix frowns as the little sleeping rabbit she's painting begins to move on the paper. All the little rabbits in the picture start to move and twitch.
Be still, little imps. Peter, you naughty boy. Look what an example you're setting.
The bunnies freeze as Mrs. Potter enters.
That's better. Any more of that, and I'll paint you out.
Your father is home.
Beatrix hurries out.
How's your day at the club, Father?
Interesting, as always.
Rupert, we seem to have a situation. We need your resolution.
I want to invite Norman Warren and his sister to our Christmas party.
Oh, with Lady Armitage, with Sir Nigel and Sybil, a tradesman, Rupert. How will anyone have fun?
He's a gentleman who publishes my books, Father.
Rupert.
I have something here, Beatrix. I went into Hatchard's bookshop and I purchased this with good money. Now, Hugh Whittaford bearded me in the club and rattled on for hours. You know, old Hugh, jowls all aflutter. Wife bought three of your girls' books for our granddaughter's nursery, sending more by ship to chums in Bombay. Very soon the whole club was telling me of some purchase that they had made of our daughter's creations. So I thought it was time that I bought one. So I went straight into Hatchard's, put my shilling onto the counter.
I would have given you one.
But I wanted to buy one, like everyone else. Now, I owe you an apology, Beatrix. When you showed me your books, all I saw was my little girl bringing me clever drawings for me to comment on. You're not a little girl anymore. You're an artist, a genuine article. I would have been proud to use that word about myself. Now I'm proud of you, Beatrix.
Thank you, Father.
So I don't see any reason why we cannot make a little social effort to welcome the gentleman responsible for this blessing into our home.
Thank you, Father. Thank you.
I think it will be good for all of us.
Mrs. Potter looks sternly at her husband.
Merry Christmas, Rupert.
She stalks off. The Christmas tree is festooned with decorations.
Yes. Glynis, don't serve Sir Nigel the punch with brandy, unless he demands it.
Yes, ma'am.
And after dinner, he'll take port. Come and give me a little signal after he's had four glasses.
Yes, right. Ma'am.
The house shimmers, my darling. You've done it again.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Good
evening, ma'am. Good evening. Mr. Warren, Millie, how wonderful. Thank you, Jane.
Thank you. Thank you.
Beatrix leads Millie by the hand to meet her parents.
Mother, Father, I would like you to meet Miss Amelia and Mr. Norman Warren. How charming of you to be so punctual.
Servants circulate among the Potter's grand guests with trays of champagne and canapés. Mr. Potter sips champagne with a florid-faced gentleman, and Mrs. Potter natters on a sofa with a lady holding a lace fan and dripping in pearls. Wiggin keeps a very close eye on Warren, Millie and Beatrix, but also eyes the drinks tray.
Go on, one wouldn't hurt.
I think Wiggin is under strict orders never to leave our side.
How festive.
Mr. Potter presides at the dinner table. The dinner table is richly decorated with crystal candlesticks and floral arrangements. The guests eat from polished silverware and sip from crystal glasses. Gradually, the long table empties. Warren rises as Beatrix, shadowed by the ever-vigilant Wiggin, comes down to join him and Millie.
Such scintillating conversation.
Oh, mine as well. The weather in Amsterdam in July.
Could I interest you ladies in an after-dinner coffee?
Some of the gentlemen would like to play a few hands of cards, but we're short of a fourth. I don't suppose you play whist, Mr. Warren.
I'm afraid I've never had much aptitude for cards.
Oh, that is a pity.
I play.
Oh, this is to play with Sir Nigel, Miss Warren. Sir Nigel takes his whist very seriously.
I play rather well, actually.
Do you, Millie?
Well, I'm sure you two have plenty to talk about without me, and if they can't play without a fourth...
Come along, Miss Warren.
Carol's in the music room, my dears.
Perhaps I could show you your Christmas present.
Yes.
It's upstairs.
I will bring the coffee.
At the coffee tray, Warren sneaks a look over his shoulder as Beatrix and Wiggin leave the room and puts a generous measure from a decanter into one of the coffee cups. He then nonchalantly picks up the tray and leaves.
Mrs. Wiggin?
Miss.
Miss Wiggin, I have taken the liberty of adding a splash of brandy to our coffees.
Oh.
Well, it is Christmas. Is this where you paint, Miss Potter?
Yes, and it's where we shall find your Christmas present.
Beaming, she holds open the door.
Oh, my.
I think other than Bertram and Father, you are the first man ever to step foot in this room.
Now, would you like me to
leave? No. Wiggin is here. And if this is the best I can do for scandal at my age, I'm hardly worthy my reputation for creativity. Here.
It's the painting of the sleeping bunnies.
My, but it's beautiful. Is it the new story? Miss Potter, is it the new story? Is it...
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you. Come over here.
Ah, it's Jemima Puddle Duck.
It's the first drawing I ever did of Jemima. Oh. I was eight, I think. Jemima, stop that.
Stop what?
Just some silliness.
Jemima flutters her eyelids and waggles her tail at him.
And what's this?
Oh, it's a music box. My father gave it to me for my sixth birthday. He did the painting himself.
Oh, so your father is an artist too?
No, he always wanted to be an artist, but the family disapproved, so he took up law. The joke is, I've never once heard him discuss a case. He goes to his club every day and never his office. So I don't really know what he does.
Oh, dear.
Who? Wigan is valuable.
I'm afraid, Miss Potter, your reputation is now officially dented. Ah, let me teach you how to dance. Do you dance, Miss Potter?
No. Well, not well.
Now I make a terrible hash of it too when I try, but the words are very sweet.
I don't know the words. Will you sing the words?
Let me teach you how to dance. Let me lead you to the floor. Simply place your hand in mine and then think of nothing more. Let the music cast its spell. Give the atmosphere a chance. Simply follow where I lead. Let me teach you how to dance. Miss Potter, I know you have decided not to marry. All my life I thought that I would not marry either, but something has happened that has caused me to change my mind.
Mr. Walker.
No, please, let me go on, for if I do not say what I have to say now, I fear I never will. Miss Potter, I would like you to consider doing me the honor, and I do not expect an immediate answer.
Beatrix? I was just showing Mr. Warren his Christmas present. I'm an impeccably genteel unmarried lady, Mother. I haven't begun to invite men to my room. Mr. Warren?
Nose in the air, she strides past her mother, who eyes Warren coldly and gives a curt nod. She looks uncomfortably around the room, then spots the sleeping Wiggin. Kicked awake, Wiggin drifts after Mrs. Potter. Beatrix re-enters the drawing room, clutching the bunny picture. Warren stands alone, frowning anxiously and looking at the floor.
What is the picture, Beatrix?
I've written and drawn little children's books which have been published. The man who published them is here, Mr. Norman Warren. Mm. To thank him for his assistance and generosity, I'm writing him a Christmas story.
Can we hear it?
Oh, it isn't finished, so.
Oh, go on.
Oh, well, I suppose before we part for the evening, I could share a glimpse of the unfinished tale of the rabbit's Christmas party.
Shut up.
One particularly snowy Christmas Eve, a young rabbit and his fearsome older brothers and fiercely brave sister set out on a journey they make every year to celebrate with their friends. Now, rabbits are highly sociable creatures, and legend has it that wherever they find themselves on Christmas Eve, they get together and throw a jolly party. Now, I know such a legend exists because I made it up. The rabbits travel through the woods to the well-appointed burrow of their cousins, where a warm fire is waiting for them. They take off their frosty coats, and the party begins. Now, I know on this night that they will eat and talk and dance and laugh and roast apples on the fire. But I'm not certain how the story ends, because I haven't made that part up yet. But in any case, Mr. Warren will have to read it first, as he is my strict censor. And, well, it is his present. Merry Christmas, Mr. Warren.
Thank you, Miss Potter. It's so beautiful.
Here.
Thank you.
Good show.
There'll be no problem with presents for the grandchildren next year, I dare say.
Oh, you must be very proud, Helen.
It's just a children's story. Outstanding. Can I talk to you? Of course.
Looking quite flustered, Beatrix drags Millie towards the French windows.
What is it? Is there something wrong?
No. That's my confidant.
You have something to confide? How delicious. Your brother has asked me to marry him. And I feel, quite irrationally, that I may say yes.
I'd like your approval.
My approval?
Beatrix.
Don't be a fool. Marry him. Tomorrow. Don't waste a moment. How could you hesitate?
You're not upset.
Well, why would I be upset?
Well, both Norman and I, you'll be alone.
You have a chance for happiness and you're worrying about me. I wouldn't worry about you if someone came along who loved me and whom I loved, I would trample my mother. Do you love Norman?
Hey.
Then marry him. Don't you dare think about anyone else.
But what about all the blessings of being alone?
Hogwash. What else is a woman on her own supposed to say? You have a chance to be loved. Take it. And leave me happy knowing that the two people that I love are happy. That is the most thought you should ever have for me.
There you are, Beatrix. The guests. Yes, Mother. Oh, Millie.
A look of sadness passes across Millie's face.
What is going on tonight? Why do I feel like a stranger in my own home?
You have a clever daughter, Rupert. You must be very proud.
Oh, Beatrix?
Yes, we are.
To write and draw like that?
Beatrix should meet my niece, Anne. She makes pots.
Ceramics, Nigel.
Well, look like pots to me. As for you, madam, I suggest you take up knitting. Yeah. Well, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What was all that about?
Sir Nigel disapproves of the way I play whist. I'm afraid I won 2 guineas from him.
Mr. Warren! Your painting.
Oh, yes, my Christmas present.
Yes.
Warren is almost tearful with joy.
Just you, Bellman. Bye-bye.
Goodbye, Mr. Warren.
Goodbye, Mr. Warren.
He bows to Beatrix, barely able to contain his excitement, then leaves. Beatrix rushes joyfully up the stairs to her room and hurries to the window to wave goodbye to Warren's departing coach. Clasping her hands together in sheer delight, Beatrix sways gently to the music. Warren walks up snow-covered steps and stamps the snow off his shoes on a mat with Reform Club emblazoned upon it.
Sir?
I have an appointment to see Mr. Rupert Potter in the Eagleton room.
He's expecting you, sir.
Thank you.
Walking along the grandly colonnaded corridors of Mr. Potter's club, past impressive paintings and leather-upholstered benches, Warren arrives at an imposing wooden door.
Come along, Norman. It's only her father.
Come in.
A grandfather clock shows the meeting lasts barely 5 minutes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Potter, for taking the time out of your very busy day.
Goodbye, Mr. Warren. If you will not accept our advice and decision, then we will have to impose that advice.
With respect our knowledge of the world and our opinions, Beatrix,
what?
You
have
no understanding our experience and the consequences of our
actions.
Go!
Wiggins shoos away an eavesdropping maid.
I said that I'll do it, and I will.
Norman Warren is a tradesman, Beatrix. No potter can marry into trade, and that's final.
And what are we? Father's money comes from grandfather's printing works in Lancashire. A trade, Mother. And if grandfather hadn't run for Parliament, we'd still be living in the shadow of his factories. Your legacy came from Grandfather Leach's cotton trade. When did we become so high and mighty? We're parvenus, Mother. Social climbers.
Your father and I will not allow this marriage for your own good, and there's no reason to become insulted.
It's not an insult. It's the truth. Our lives are pretension and social aspiration. Sir this and lady that.
Norman Warne is a gentleman of comfortable means and not one bit beneath us. And I intend to marry him.
Not if you expect to take one penny of your inheritance.
You haven't disinherited Bertram for running off with a wine merchant's daughter. Happily, I'm a published author. I have means of my own. This discussion is over.
Although her mother looks distraught, alone in her room, Beatrix holds her chin high with a look of complete determination.
Come in, Father. Why is it that after any difficult situation, she always sends you?
Mama didn't send me. I don't like tension in my home. I want to resolve this matter.
Well, you can't. I've made my decision.
Your mother wants what is best for you, as do I, Beatrix. An impulsive and inappropriate marriage is something that you would ultimately regret.
You can't allow me to marry and leave. With Bertram moved away, who would take care of you?
Surely do not think that we would deny you happiness just simply because we needed a nursemaid. And that is a knife in my heart.
Well, then what is it, Father? Because I can't understand.
You cannot make us the villains, Beatrix. Your mother trotted out countless suitors, all of them acceptable. You rejected every one of them.
I know that, Father. I didn't want to be a silly woman marrying a man simply because he was acceptable or rich enough to take care of me. But does that mean that I'm never to be loved? Father!
Beatrix strides across the marble foyer of a bank.
Wigan, wait here, please.
I'd like to inquire about my royalty earnings, Mr. Copperthwaite, and whether I might, at some stage, afford a house of my own in the country.
You have enough to buy an estate. Several estates and a house in town. You're quite a wealthy woman, Miss Potter.
Am I truly?
Yes, the income has become quite regular. If your fortune continues to grow, you should have no financial worries for the rest of your
life. She's totally lost for words.
Extraordinary.
Mr. and Mrs. Potter are having breakfast at their vast dining room table. Mrs. Potter stirs her tea vigorously and, looking up, spies Beatrix carrying a breakfast tray.
Beatrix?
Beatrix, come and sit with us, please.
I'd rather not, Father.
We have something to discuss. A proposition.
And for heaven's sake, Beatrix, let the servants carry your dishes.
Thank you. Tea? No, thank you.
Nonsense, you always take tea.
Contrary to what you think and what you have so vehemently expressed, your mama and I want you to be happy.
We simply doubt that this marriage will do the trick.
Helen, please, sit down, Beatrix. What we don't want is for you to rush into something which you may later wish to reconsider.
I won't want to reconsider.
We are not convinced.
Helen, please. We are not convinced. Yet neither have we hearts of stone. Therefore, this is what we propose. You may accept Mr. Warne, but it must remain a complete secret, even from his own family. Now, this summer, yourself, Mama, and I will go, as always, to the Lake District. If, at the end of the summer, you still wish to proceed, then we will announce your engagement, and you can marry with our blessing and our love.
Why must no one know?
So there'll be no public embarrassment when you change your mind.
If you change your mind. Now, Beatrix, if you care for this man as much as you say you do, then in a few months the ardor will still be there. If your mother and Anne and I are correct and this emotion cools with time, then we will have protected you against humiliation and unhappiness.
It will not cool.
Beatrix, listen to me. A woman at your age must consider
Mother,
very care.
The only thing true at my age is that at my age, every day matters. Very well, Mother, Father. I accept your terms. Norman and I may decide to wait in any case. But make plans. There will be a wedding in this house by October.
She sweeps out, grinning. Her mother looks quite stunned. standing in the evening dark, snow falling, Warne presses a little silver box into Beatrix's gloved hand. She looks into his eyes, smiles, and slipping off her glove, opens the box and places the diamond and sapphire ring contained within onto her finger. Beatrix arrives at the Warne Brothers' bustling office with a portfolio. She and Warne smile a greeting. Wiggin settles in a corner, and Beatrix opens the folder. Revealed is the title page for The Tale of Mrs. Tiggywinkle. Warne flicks through the drawings until he arrives at the picture of a stout, matronly hedgehog in a house cap and apron, holding an iron. Bustling shopping street, Millie distracts Wiggin, pointing to a shop window. Warne and Beatrix stand close together, smiling and watching from across the street. In the window next to a sign reading Just Arrived are neat piles of The Tale of Mrs. Tiggywinkle. Wiggin's face melts into a smile of almost tearful joy. The Potters arrive at a busy railway station. Beatrix and her parents settle into their compartment.
This is the Potters for Windermere.
Right, you are, sir.
Luggage is loaded into the baggage car.
Beatrix?
Beatrix spots Warne walking past the window. She dives out of the carriage and runs down the platform, clutching her hat to her head.
Mr. Warne! Oh, I do apologise.
The bowler-hatted man looks startled. Then she spots him, making his way down the platform, peering in at carriage windows.
Miss Potter!
Mr. Warne! I was beginning to fear you wouldn't come. You're soaked!
It wasn't raining when I left the office. I brought you the proof of the new book for your trip.
Oh, you'll catch cold.
I couldn't miss seeing you off. You know nothing would stop me.
This is going to be the longest summer I've
ever
spent.
But it's only the summer, that's all.
Yes?
And this time is not for us, it's for your parents. How can they know what we're feeling? They've never felt it.
No.
We can afford them this 3 months.
I suppose. Oh.
This is not how I wish to say goodbye to you.
Enveloped in a cloud of steam from the engine, they kiss. They part breathlessly, looking deep into each other's eyes, as the guard waves his green flag for the train's departure.
Goodbye, Miss Potter. I look forward to your speedy return.
As do I, Mr. Warne.
Quickly.
Yes.
Here.
Guiding her by the elbow, Warne helps Beatrix onto the moving train.
Goodbye, Miss Potter.
Goodbye, Mr. Warne. Goodbye, Norman.
He grins with pleasure at the use of his first name, and they wave to each other as the train pulls slowly away in the pouring rain. Amid green rolling hills, the train steams across a high brick viaduct. Beatrix stands on the bank of a glassy lake by a small wood-framed pergola and stone boathouse. The surrounding hills are a patchwork of colours.
My dear, dear Norman, this absurd forced separation is surely a kind of madness, most notably that of my mother. But you are here, my dear, for me. The beauty of this place seems magnified somehow with you in my mind. In my occasional lonely moments, I imagine conversations between us, and yesterday startled a duck with my declaration of love for you.
All of my thoughts are with you, my darling. I know that you find Harold and Fruing terribly boring, but in fact I am having what I could almost describe as wild enjoyment working with them. You may wake up one day to find yourself married to a businessman. Praise the day when I can wake up to find you beside me.
I took one of the boats out onto the lake at sunset to watch the water hens feeding. They made noises like kissing. I closed my eyes and pictured you.
I find I love my heart more now, because that is where I know I can find you. Amelia sends her fond love and wishes for us all to be together again, as do I, multiplied 100-fold.
Out walking, Beatrix spots a man in a dark suit nailing a sign to a gatepost.
Sir, Hilltop Farm. May I ask, is it a working farm?
Aye. Another great one falls. But this one breaks your heart.
Really? Why?
Ah, miss, a body'd have to be a poet, which I certainly am not. Excuse me, but I'd swear you were someone I once knew.
Good heavens, Willie Healis.
Miss Beatrix, Miss Potter.
Is that you?
How good to see you.
Well, hello. I see you've given up on the law. Have you decided to make an honest living?
Ah, yes, the law. Well, not exactly. No, no, a country solicitor needs to be proficient in many skills.
Of course.
And it suits me to be out of the office now and again. Now I could show you Hilltop, if you have the time.
Yes. Yes, time is exactly what I have.
Good.
They walk past the for sale sign to a neatly kept farmhouse and buildings.
Not a bad outlook, Miss Potter.
It's sublime. By chance, I met an old friend today who showed me a beautiful farm that's for sale. It would be a perfect country home, and though I know we'll live mainly in the city, I'm very keen to share my favourite places with you.
The post has arrived, and once again, no letter from your Mr. Warne. Is it time for me to start getting just a little hopeful?
He did mention he might take a few days' holiday. Mm. The post is no doubt slow from wherever he's gone.
Yes, indeed.
But there is something that appears to be from that interesting sister of his.
Millie? Mm. How delightful. Excuse me.
Smiling, she takes the letter, goes down the steep stone garden steps to the lakeside, opens the envelope, and begins to read. She drops her portfolio and rushes back to the house.
Norman is ill.
Her father gets up, looking concerned. In a long travel coat carrying a small bag, Beatrix is driven away in a small cart. She arrives at the Warne's London house by hansom cab and hurries to the front door.
I'm Beatrix Potter. Please come in, miss.
She's greeted by Norman's older brother, the bearded Harold.
Ah, Miss Potter.
Hello.
Please come.
Thank you. I came as soon as I heard.
Yes, it's very kind of you. Very, very kind indeed.
How is he?
Beatrix.
Millie. Millie?
Millie's dressed all in black.
I'm too late.
Millie nods tearfully and guides Beatrix into the next room, away from Harold.
He was so happy. He sang songs. He made me dance with him in the parlour. He laughed all the time. Everyone noticed the change, and only I knew the reason. But all summer, he had a cough. And then the cough got worse. And in one night, he was gone. It was so sudden, I keep thinking that it hasn't happened. I keep expecting to see him in the garden.
When's the funeral?
It was yesterday. It was only the immediate family and I couldn't think of a reason to ask them to delay it for you.
The sombre Warne brothers enter the room.
It was considerate of you to come and pay your respects, Miss Potter.
Our mother is particularly moved and is sorry she isn't well enough to come down to greet you.
I'll be taking over our late brother's business affairs, Miss Potter.
Fine.
I want to assure you that F. Warren and Company will do everything in its power to ensure that our tragic loss causes you the least possible inconvenience.
Please accept the gratitude of the entire family.
Beatrix maintains rigid self-control as they nod stiffly and leave.
They want me to go.
I'm sorry.
Stepping out of another horse-drawn cab, Beatrix arrives back at her parents' London house. She strides up the path and a maid opens the door.
Miss Beatrix, what are you doing in London? Is something wrong?
A friend died.
I'm sorry, miss. Was she a close friend?
Beatrix hurries upstairs to her room. She slumps against the door, then removes her coat and a necklace. Rubbing her hands together, she wanders around the room. Then she spots the music box, whose tune she danced to with Norman. A maid comes upstairs with a tray.
Miss Beatrix? Miss Beatrix? I'll leave your dinner outside the door then, miss.
Beatrix is lying on a rug on the floor in her darkened room, barely moving. Her eyes are open and staring at nothing. When the maid returns, the tray is still outside the room, untouched.
Saunders is here, Miss Potter, to take you to the station.
I shan't be going back to the lakes.
Can I get you anything then?
Nothing, Hilda.
Very well, Miss Potter.
Still in the dark, Beatrix walks agitatedly up and down in her room. She sits at her desk and starts to draw. Quickly, hurriedly, pressing hard on the paper, her desk becomes littered with screwed-up, discarded drawings. The latest creation is a frog, sitting on a lily pad, fishing. With a sweep of her brush, a grey smudge becomes a fish swimming in the paper water. She smiles as the little frog begins to move, casting his line. The fish gets bigger, snatching the line from the frog and bumping the lily pad aggressively. Shocked, Beatrix holds out her brush for the frog to grab onto. He blinks in terror, then dives into the water. Discarding the sheet of paper, the one beneath shows the frog hopping away into a cabbage patch, past a surprised-looking Peter Rabbit in his little blue jacket. Peter hops away too. On page after page, first Peter, then Jemima look startled and run away. Great black crows circle and start to peck at the blue jacket, hanging like a scarecrow from a pole. Beatrix looks horrified. On all the discarded pages, the pictures, most only half finished, are moving, coming to life.
Beatrix, it's Millie. Look, I know I'm unannounced, but they sent back all my messages. Please, please, please let me in.
Millie pulls open the curtains. Beatrix stares at her and looks blankly around the paper-strewn room.
We've got to get you out of here. Come on. Come on. Let's get you washed and dressed and out of this room. Go and find something to wear.
Millie starts to tidy up.
I can't.
They hold each other tightly.
I've been torturing myself. I should never have encouraged you with no one. I'd have saved you all this terrible grief.
I loved him.
I loved him too. But he's gone.
I must leave this house. I will leave this house.
Millie nods encouragingly. Rain falls from dark grey clouds on the high green hills of the Lake District. Beatrix puts her signature onto a document, also bearing the signature W.M. Healis.
Congratulations, Miss Potter. You are now the proud owner of Hilltop Farm. Thank you, George. Well, I'm sure you'll be very happy at Hilltop. I spent some time there as a child.
Is that so? I did have other plans for it, but I'm sure that I will love it in any case.
Yes. If you need any other assistance or help...
Thank you very much, Mr. Healis. Good day.
Good day, Miss Potter.
At the Potter's London residence, removal men are carrying furniture from Beatrix's room. She's tidying her things as her parents come in.
What I don't understand, Beatrix, is how you're going to pay for this farm.
I'm a writer, Mother. People buy my work.
Our daughter is famous, Helen. You're the only person who doesn't know it.
Mrs. Potter looks offended and walks off indignantly.
What I don't understand is why you find it necessary to leave your home.
It is not a choice, Father.
Beatrix, if I could undo anything...
There's nothing to undo. This has nothing to do with you or Mother. I must make my own way.
So you must.
His face softens to a smile, and he gently strokes his daughter's cheek. She grins and fussily brushes something from his lapel. The removal men leave Hilltop Farm. Indoors, Beatrix stands surveying her snug but sparsely furnished new home. Decisively, she opens a small chest and pulls out the painting of Jemima.
Everybody out. You see? I told you we could not know where our journey would lead. It has led us here. This is your new home.
She places the framed pictures on a wooden dresser and wags a scolding finger at Peter.
No tears!
In bed at night under a plain white sheet, Beatrix lies awake sobbing. Sunny daylight shines on Hilltop Farm, nestling in a green, wooded valley. Beatrix awakens and sits up in bed. She walks to the top of a hill, a breeze ruffling the long grasses, and looks around at the sun-bathed peaks and valleys of her new home. She begins to sort out her belongings. Opening a leather trunk, she unpacks her art materials and finds the wooden box containing her paintbrushes. She opens the box and pensively begins to sift through the brushes and pencils within. Millie arrives by cart. She's holding a square package wrapped in cloth.
Miss?
Billy. Oh. It's wonderful to see you.
Oh, this place is perfect.
Millie. But what have you brought?
Oh, well, I thought it best not to bring this, but then it jumped into my hand as I walked out the door.
Beatrix looks inquiringly at her, then removes the cloth, revealing the rabbit painting she gave to Norman for Christmas.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
The two friends walk in the countryside.
It's getting easier.
It's getting easier for me too.
I'm painting again. My mind's going mad with the story. I've got pigs running amok up there.
Well, it's this place, isn't it? Who'd want to be cooped up in London when they could be up here?
So glad you came.
Me too.
I've been so lucky with visitors. First my brother Bertram, then my mother.
You think that's lucky? Your mother is a monster.
No, it's fine. My mother and I have come to an understanding. We've agreed to not understand each other.
Dark peaks loom over a mirror-still lake and a lush green valley. In sun-dappled woods, Beatrix sits beneath a tree, sketching. On her hands and knees, she works in her vegetable garden with a small trowel. A meeting is held in the local hall.
There'll be no more farming.
And all you're left with is a ruined landscape and no community.
A sign reads, Support the Lands Trust.
Miss Potter!
Ah, Mr. Healers. I see you found me.
I played here so often as a child. I know your farm very well.
Oh.
Swam in the stream, played hide and seek in the woods with Cousin Charles. I brought you the executed deed for the farm.
At last. Thank you very much, Mr. Healers.
Busy?
Yes. Yes, I've asked Mr. Cannon to stay on and run Hilltop as a working farm. I'm learning a great deal.
I wish everyone who bought land up here could be so enlightened. You've bought a farm, you've kept the workers on, you're working the land and you're preserving this place.
Yes. Makes me happy. Mr. Cannon says the two farms adjoining mine are for sale. I'd hate to see the developers get hold of them. Do you know anything about them?
Piglets root around in their sty.
Calling Mr. Cannon.
Miss Potter.
Why, they've grown.
Handsome lot, wouldn't you say?
Yes. Have you named them?
We don't often give them names, Miss Potter. Makes it a bit hard come slaughtering time. Hello, Miss Potter.
Hello yourself, Mr. Healers. To what do I owe this pleasure?
I've come with a message. Mr. Hubbard is ill and will be unable to show you the neighbouring farms today.
Oh, dear. It's not serious, I hope.
Chronic illness, I'm afraid. Recurs several times a month, usually after a night at the Rose and Crown.
I see.
Mr. Hubbard wondered if I might show you the properties instead.
I'd be pleased to have so knowledgeable a guide. I'll just get my shawl.
Well, it's prime land. There's a lot of profit in building houses on it.
Ah, but more value as a working farm, surely.
Spoken like a true lakes woman, Miss Potter.
Indeed, Mr. Healers. You do realise I've never been to an auction?
Well, it's simple enough. Don't bid too early and stick to your limit.
I know my limit, Mr. Healers.
Craven's Mill Farm. 40 acres of splendour. £1,100 anywhere? £1,100 I'm bid. £1,150. Come along, gentlemen. Splendid little farm, this. Lots of development potential. £1,150. £1,200 anywhere. £1,200. £1,300 anywhere. Bidding, madam, £1,300. Seated at £1,300. £1,400. £1,500. £1,600. £700. £800. £1,900. At £2,000. At the back, £2,000. Any more? At £2,000.
£2,300, rich bastard.
Thank you, sir. £2,300. At £2,300. Any more then? At £2,300? £2,500. The lady at £2,500. Against you, sir, at £2,500. £2,800.
Miss Potter, you bid more than that farm is worth.
£2,800. £3,000. At £3,000, seated with the lady. Against you, sir, are we all done? At £3,000. Going once, going twice. Sold to the lady, £3,000.
Beatrix beams happily.
Sir, you should control your client. She has allowed her emotions to get the better of her.
Really?
She has squandered any possibility of profit from that farm. It was prime development land.
This place, this community, is an inspiration. It should be conserved for future generations and not destroyed. It deserves protection.
Madam, your observations are woefully inadequate.
Sir, I am no longer in the habit of being lectured to. And, thankfully, I do not require your approval or anyone else's. So, if you'll excuse us, Mr. Healis.
Healis smirks at the grey-haired businessman and follows Beatrix away from the auction room.
I hope you're not going to make a habit of this, Miss Potter.
Do you know, Mr. Healis, I think I might. Now, will you have time tomorrow to show me those other farms?
I certainly will.
Excellent.
Healis arrives at Hilltop Farm, nestling in its picturesque valley. He opens a wooden gate and steps through, closing it behind him.
Oh, my. Goodness me.
I'll be just a moment.
He looks appreciatively around the comfortable room with a pot of bright yellow flowers on the table and Beatrix's pictures on the dresser. He recognises Jemima Puddle Duck. Beatrix spies on him as he spots Peter's picture.
Now then, young man, how are you taking to your new home? I know it's not London, but Hilltop might suit a young rabbit better. He seems to be taken to the place.
As am I, Mr. Healis. Now, the road.
Oh, yes, yes, of course, Miss Potter. Oh. How would you feel about calling me William instead of this infernal Mr. Healis? Sound like an undertaker.
Of course, William. And I believe Beatrix might be perfectly appropriate as well.
The countryside is rolling wooded grasslands and hills. Beneath a cloudy sky, a lake is surrounded by ancient volcanic peaks. Beatrix and William walk together across a grassy meadow.
There's something delicious about writing those first few words of a story. You can never quite tell where they'll take you. Mine took me here, where I belong.
Beatrix sits sketching on a grassy hill overlooking the lake, near a dry stone wall. Eight years after moving to the Lake District, Beatrix married William Healis. Her mother did not approve. Beatrix donated 4,000 acres of farmland to the British people through a land preservation trust. Beatrix Potter's stories became the best-selling children's books of all time. With Renee Zellweger as Beatrix Potter, Ewan McGregor as Norman Warne, Emily Watson as Millie Warne, Barbara Flynn as Helen Potter, Bill Patterson as Rupert Potter, Matilok Gibbs as Miss Wiggin, Lloyd Owen as William Healis, Anton Lesser as Harold Warne, David Bamber as Frewing Warne, Patricia Kerrigan as Fiona, Lucy Boynton as young Beatrix, Oliver Jenkins as young Bertram, Justin MacDonald as young Helis, Judith Barker as Hilda, Christopher Middleton as Saunders, Lynn Farley as Lady Sybil, John Woodvine as Sir Nigel, Jane Howe as Lady Armitage, Geoffrey Beavers as Mr. Copperthwaite, Bridget McConnell as Lady Stokely, Joseph Greaves as Lionel Stokely, Claire Gifford as Mrs. Haddon Bell, Andy McSorley as Harry Haddon Bell, Sarah Crowden as Lady Clifford, Richard Mulholland as Ashton Clifford, Mark Finn as Mr. Cannon, Nicholas Hutchinson as Meeting Chairman, Mike Burnside as Man at Meeting, Dominic Kemp as the Auctioneer, and Barry McCormick as the Bidder.
When you taught me how to dance years ago with misty eyes, every step and silent glance, every move a sweet surprise, someone must have taught you well to beguile and to entrance. For that night you cast your spell and you taught me how to dance. Like reflections in a lake, I recall what went before. As I give, I learn to take, and will be alone no more. Other lights may light my way, I may even find romance, but I won't forget that night when you taught me how to dance. Cold winds blow, but up on those hills you find me, and I know you're walking right behind me. When you taught me how to dance years ago with misty eyes, every step and silent glance, every move a sweet surprise, someone must have taught you well to be guided to entrance. For that night you cast your spell and you taught